Well, good morning, Oak Grove. It's been a kind of an interesting morning. Not only did Steve Nelson pass away, Donnie had told me one of the guys from Chainbreakers was killed in a motorcycle accident this week. So I hope that you will be in prayer for different families. It's Father's Day is really a great day for many people, but some individuals it's harder. And what I want to do this morning is, we have talked about it, is this idea of how to raise a fool. Hence, we ran back into medieval times and we found these things to represent this concept this morning about raising a fool. You might say, well, why would we want to do that? Well, we'll get there in terms of the text. I've already had people speculate as to what this represents. Somebody always has already suggested it represents the five elders that are on our elder board. I didn't ascribe to that. I didn't even suggest it. That's not kind of where it's going. So that's not what it refers to. But one of the things that I want to address, rather than addressing dads and what they should be and great quality dads, and we know fatherhood, just like motherhood, is a really a huge responsibility, and that's not in everybody's wheelhouse. Some of you are single, some of you are grandparents now. But the things that I want to talk about, I hope will sort of transcend just the parenting, and that if you're a single person investing in a young person, if you teach Sunday school, if you're a grandparent, some of the things we're going to talk about are things that you can move alongside parents and support, you can build into individual lives, and we'll talk about that as we go. One of the things that this whole idea of being a fool is the best picture we could find was finding jesters. Medieval times, they had these jesters, they called them fools at some point, where they had big, rich parties for the upper elite. They would be the ones running around. You'd see in movies that are juggling and playing instruments. And they weren't the most educated people on the planet. They had roles and responsibilities, but it wasn't anything that anybody necessarily aspired to. And there's different things about it that we picture when we think and see these kinds of hats and these kinds of jester and fool outfits, because it's not necessarily what we'd all ascribe to. But this morning, I want to talk about the concept of parenting, and I have entitled it, How to Raise a Fool. And so as we begin to think through this, I want you to sort of think, especially if you're a parent, that there's certain things that it is true about the reality of it. Now, if we look at this text that we're going to look at in Proverbs 22, I want to simply read it for you and identify the things that it says. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. So the idea of foolishness is something that I believe is almost a euphemism for the idea of what we would call sin nature, or the sinfulness that we all come into this world. Next Sunday afternoon, we have some neighbors who just had a little baby. Isla, I believe is her name, if I keep the letters straight. She was born in April. They have not gone out very much. I don't know if they're a family that gives their baby shots or not. It was kind of one of those kind of things. But we told them we'd like to have kind of a neighborhood celebration for their new family. So we have an open house next Sunday where we're going to have the neighbors in as they're available. And from 3 to 5, we're going to celebrate this new life and try to encourage them as they start their new family. Now, little infants look really cute, but one of the things that you will discover very quickly in life, no matter how cute the package is, there's a lot of foolishness wrapped up and bound to their heart. And that's literally what the term says, is that foolishness is engrafted into, is bound up in the life of every infant that comes into this world. And so as you begin to think about the ramifications for this, the scriptures is clearly saying somehow we have to deal with that. Now, just the idea of discipline itself doesn't get someone to heaven, and these passages aren't absolute guarantees to say that, well, if you do these formulaic things, then this will guarantee that your kid will come out a certain way. I've seen some kids grow up in situations where the parents were terrible, and somehow they've been able to rise above that, either because of God's grace or because of other people inputting their life, but somehow they can rise somewhat above the dysfunction and the problems of parenting when they're extreme. I've seen other individuals who are raised in fantastic homes where parents are very generous and loving and kind, and the kids are a train wreck. So we know there's no magic sprinkle dust that guarantees anything, but the Proverbs are written in terms of principles. If there's certain things you do, here is what the outcome generally will be. Here's the responsibility of righteousness in the home, and we want to sort of take a glance at it. A biblical fool is different than a court jester in terms of what we're thinking about in medieval times. A biblical fool, for instance, it begins in the beginning of Proverbs by saying this, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instructions, and forsake not your mother's teachings, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck." So the very launching pad that all of Proverbs is built around, a lot hinges around father, mother, parent, kids relationship, and it's emphasized. It's a strong emphasis in terms of the scriptures. But in this particular text, it tells us that the rod of reproof, the rod being a scepter or a staff, it's often associated with a shepherd's staff or a teacher's, or even identified with a tribe as a scepter that sort of was their way of branding their identity as a local tribal group or identity. Now, I'm not going to get into this morning this whole idea of particularly whether dads should spank their kids or put them in timeouts. I'm not going to deal with those mechanics. But what I want to do is really come back to the basic framework that I know is a struggle at times in our culture, both because of the busyness of life and often because we are growing a society where, in a sense, the kids rule. I'm married to a teacher, and I hear it all the time. When I was growing up, if you messed up at school, you were in bigger trouble back home. Today, if kids get in trouble at school, parents almost universally, although that's an extreme, tend to side with the kids, and the school is the problem, and it's the teachers. And so there's a danger in our culture that parents want to be their kids' friends more than they want to be parents. And so as we begin to think through this, the idea here is basically this idea that discipline is an essential part of being a dad. It's part of parenting. So however we scope that out, I want to paint the opposite picture that we did at Mother's Day. In Mother's Day, we dealt with this concept of train up a child in the way they should go, and even when they are old, they won't depart from it. Now, I'm not going to go back over all those pieces, but the idea is what you are and what you do as a parent when children are young and you're raising them, they learn that stuff. When I went back for the first time, it was obviously a couple of years ago, I met my son's girlfriend at that time, now fiance, who's getting married at the end of the summer. We sat down for a meal, went to a restaurant and ate, and afterwards my son came to me, and one of the first things that Gabri, her name's Gabrielle, but we call her Gabri, said is, "Oh, now I know why you do what you do." I wasn't sure if that was a compliment or not, but we're still dealing with it. But even his bad jokes look like mine. I mean, it's just kind of what happens is that we become like our parents no matter how much we fight it. There's always some good things that are part of our life and also some things that we would rather shed. But in this process, one of the questions that always comes up when you're dealing with these two texts is, all right, does this text mean raise them up in the way that they should go, or is it raise them up in the way that they're bent? And the answer is yes, because every child is unique. They have unique personalities. They have unique disposition, propensities. They respond to different things. And so in one respect, discipline has to be unique and custom built to every kid. And on the other side, you can't show favors by having completely different rules for different kids, because then it confuses them. And what does that mean? So this morning, what I want to do is simply paint the picture of how to raise a fool. I'm obviously flipping it on its side, but the premise here is this. If we do not properly discipline our children as they are growing up and deal with the foolishness that is bound up in their heart, every person will be raised to be an adult fool. If parents refuse to discipline their kids, they are doing the best they can to guarantee that their child will grow up to be a fool. Now, of course, a biblical fool might be different than this. We've got clowns and musicians, and that's not what it's talking about, as if that's less than the creative expression of other people. But at the heart of this, we need to realize that if we're unwilling or think that we're unable to discipline our kids, or as to move alongside as a grandparent, or someone as a loving friend to a family and to support what the family wants to do, then we are guaranteed, as it were, or the closest thing to guarantee, to raising fools. So this morning I want to give you five profiles, five descriptions, five labels of the kind of fool that we're talking about in the scriptures, that if we refuse to discipline, that's what our kids will become. Now, one of the problems here is that when we have the word discipline in our mind, probably most of the time we think punishment. They act badly, we fix it. They treat their siblings badly, we fix it. We stop what's going on. And most of us have this idea that discipline is always about stopping bad behavior. But when you look at the scriptures, I think in the context of this, we're going to see that the idea of discipline has a variety of different nuances to it, and it's not always about correcting bad behavior. So the first profile that I want to talk to you about, and when our team graciously put these together for us, is that if you do not discipline, the foolish adult or the foolish young person is a person who is a sluggard or who is lazy. This is what the text says. If you back up a couple of verses from this, it says, the sluggard says, there's a lion outside, I shall be slain in the streets. Now, it's an intriguing type of passage. In fact, there's a whole section in Proverbs chapter 26 that sort of highlights this. In fact, it uses the same phrase. Let me just read it for you. The sluggard says, there's a lion in the road, a lion in the open square. As the door turns on its hinges, so does the sluggard on his bed. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He is weary of bringing it to his mouth again. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can give a discreet answer. And so what happens if there's no discipline in the home is that the foolishness that is incumbent, or one of the expressions of foolishness that can shape the character of our children when they're growing up, is that they can be profoundly lazy, have no motivation to do anything, and are completely disinterested in doing anything. Some of the passages are very profound. Put their hand down to get some dish, and they're too lazy to even bring it up back to their mouth. And so discipline means not punishment, but training our kids to learn responsibility and some kind of work ethic. If you don't deal with that when they're young, they'll grow up to be, as in our expression, lazy bums who are sitting around expecting other people to do everything for them. And so at the heart of this is one of the reasons why we discipline kids is so they don't grow up to be an adult fool who's just lazy, won't work, won't get engaged, won't do anything, but just takes tremendous pleasure in doing nothing because they're going to expect other people to sort of pick up the ball for them and do nothing. And so this is one of the statements that's right in the context. And what is amazing here is you might say, well, what does a lion have to do with all that? Well, most commentators who look at this is because it's labeled as a sluggard, is that there probably isn't a lion out in the streets. They're probably just going, you know, if I go out in the street, I could get hit by a car. If I go walking down the street, someone could hit me on a bike. They're completely saturated, and most of their best thinking comes into making excuses why they can't do stuff. And so lazy people are individuals who are fools, at least biblically, that they have no sense of motivation, they are constantly finding excuses not to take responsibility, and won't do anything. Now, one of the things I'll say now that I'm likely to forget later is that, you know, you have this saying, well, parents, you got to pick your battles, right? Got to pick your battles. Now, usually when I hear that, I hear an adversarial thing. You got to pick your battles with your kids because you got to pick the most important ones and you don't want to go to battle over stuff that's not a big deal. And I get that. However, I think the philosophy of you got to pick your battles can have a flaw in it because we're not battling with our kids, we're battling for our kids. And if you develop a mindset that it's always adversarial and you got to pick your battles so I don't want to always be going to war with my kids, it's possible we have the wrong thinking. We're trying to battle for our kids so that they don't grow up to be a fool, especially a sluggard who's got no motivation, no sense of responsibility, no work ethic, and won't do anything. Because when they get pushed out in the real world, they're going to get creamed. They may be able to get away with it at home, but when they get in the real world, they're not going to tolerate that stuff. They're going to get hammered by people and will not make a responsible decision in their life if they don't learn responsibility. So one of the suggestions, a practical possible idea that you might work with, is I think kids need to learn to do chores. I think they have to have responsibilities. And I would even suggest that, not that this comes from the scriptures, I think some of those things need to be done without the idea that they're going to get money for it. If we're bribing our kids or paying our kids to do everything, then they get this entitlement idea that I don't have to do anything unless I'm getting paid for it. So anyway, for the sake of conversation, discipline means developing a sense of work ethic, a sense of responsibility, and we're not battling our kids, but if foolishness produces laziness in them, it's going to feel that way because they don't want to get up and do anything. But somehow, understanding their bent, you've got to find a way as a parent to help them learn about responsibility and work ethic. The second one is a little bit different, and this is the word that I call estranged. Now, the reason for that is when you go to verse 14, you have a very different verse, but it's still in the context. The mouth of a strange woman is a deep pit. Some of your versions will say the mouth of an adulteress. And the idea here, it literally means the term can mean adulteress or an alien or a strange woman, an illegitimate child, or someone who is turned away. Now, I think the idea here isn't just that it belongs to women, it can be guys as well. But the idea of someone who's a stranger, someone who, if you follow the rest of the text, really talks about the mouth of an adulteress or a strange woman is a deep pit. He who is cursed of the Lord will fall into it. We don't have the time to go through Proverbs to look at the idea of an adulteress and a woman who, when her, you know, if you go through chapter 2 and 3, the woman whose husband is gone, who goes out seducing men and trying to exploit them. And one of the flattering things about it is that their words are profoundly flattering and flirtatious. And they just have this way of trying to make people feel really important and valuable because they want something. And so the idea here is this, in terms of being an estranged person, I think as far as a parent is concerned, and this is, I think, actually probably the heaviest part of this, is I got from Doug Fields when he did intentional parenting. We used it this last year in experience when we were talking to parents. He said this. Here's what's going to happen, Dad. And he's actually talking about, let me set this just so you know, he's talking about appropriate physical affection for our kids, giving them a hug and those kind of things. He says some of us didn't grow up with hugs and others didn't, but he says, he encourages people. He says, you got to sort of get over your own uncomfortableness because here's his statement. Here's what's going to happen, dads. If you don't show love to your kids through affection, you are going to produce boys who do not know how to express themselves emotionally, and you will have girls who learn how to express themselves sexually. And so the weight of this thing is that why do people become estranged to their families? Why do they become estranged? Why do they want to use sexual activity, as it were? Well, some of them are seeking love. They have this brokenness in their identity. They're trying to find ways to feel love, feel cared for, and often that becomes an expression of it. But from the boy's side of things, if they don't feel like there's security and there's love there, they haven't got a clue how to express themselves emotionally, except maybe for anger and frustration. Those seem to be the appropriate things that we express, but gentleness and love and kindness, all that stuff can escape us if we don't discipline. And so the discipline is partly on our part, where we have to be willing to extend ourselves to love and care for our kids, verbally, emotionally, physically, because an estranged person is usually alienated from their own family and they're alienated from others because their whole purpose in life is they're desperately seeking acceptance and love and they don't know how to find it. And so an estranged person can be a detriment not only to themselves, but you'll notice that the rest of this verse simply says is what I'm calling those who are ignorant. Ignorant. It says the person who is cursed of the Lord, or he with whom the Lord is indignant or angry with, will fall into it. Now, it goes back to the very point of the fact that if the Lord is indignant with somebody, it's usually for a reason. And it's usually because of their sinfulness, their waywardness. And I will propose to you that the foolishness that's bound up in the heart of a child, if we don't deal with it, becomes the prevailing catalyst or motivation for the way they live. And it always expresses itself in the way your kid is bent. If he tends to be lazy, it'll manifest it that way. If they tend to be estranged and don't feel cared for and have a real broken identity, it can express itself in lots of different ways. But this idea here is this idea of that those who are ignorant will fall into her trap. It's all in the same verse, but it's two different people. There's the strange woman who, with her words and her flattery, and say all the right things to attract someone, and the people who are most vulnerable are the ones that have the greatest struggle accepting who they are as a person. The ignorant of the Lord, those who the Lord is indignant with. I ran into an illustration, maybe brings it a little bit home, is that a person who is a fool really has a hard time putting certain basic things together. Amy Simpson from Winfield, Illinois, had submitted this to a leadership magazine, and it was talking about a warning to fools because on certain consumer products, they stated stuff that you'd kind of like, okay, why wouldn't anybody get this? On a Duraflame fireplace log, the warning on it was caution, risk of fire. On a Batman costume, the warning was cape does not enable user to fly. Well, people do really foolish things sometimes. On a bottle of hair coloring, it says do not use on ice cream toppings. Now, you know why they put these in here, right? Somebody has been brilliant enough to pull it off, or try to. On a cardboard sunshield for a car, do not drive with sunshield in place. This is my favorite, since we're talking about parenting. On a portable stroller, caution, remove infant before folding for storage. I don't even know if I want to know the stories behind those. That just sounds unbelievable. But at the heart of all this is this idea that discipline isn't punishing them, but it's giving spiritual wisdom and guidance. For the parents who have this position that, well, kids are allowed to express themselves. You know, they're all bent differently, so we're just going to let them express themselves, whether it's anger or frustration, whether they yell at everybody else. Well, we're just going to sit back and let them express themselves. I'm kind of like, okay, that seems like a warning label we ought to put on here. Parents, don't let your kids try to figure out life by themselves. That would seem to be common sense, but there's a whole host of parents that you'll run into that just kind of figure, well, kids get to determine their whole lot. We saw this in a little bit different way. I've run in, especially when our kids were younger, we would share our spiritual things and the gospel with people, and it was amazing me how many parents would say, well, you know, we're not going to send our kids to any particular religion. We're going to let them determine their own religion when they get older. I'm kind of like, really? I mean, if you think religion is just a whole bunch of do's and don'ts and some kind of moral compass, then yeah, who cares? But if it actually has eternal significance for something, you got to be kidding that you're just going to let kids figure that out. As Christian parents, we can't possibly take that position. And so this sense of ignorance can be really profound. The next one I want to just mention is what's called an oppressor. If you look at the text in verse 16, he says, he who oppresses the poor to make much for himself is the New American Standard. The actual text in terms of ESV is whoever oppresses the poor to increase his own wealth. And so the idea is here's a person, I just use this label manipulator. You could put any other colloquial term to it, a slick salesman, a person who can take advantage of other, an extortionist. It's the individual who has this real knack and ability to take advantage of people and suck them into stuff and it's all for the purpose of taking their resources, stealing their money. We know we have a culture that is filled with, in my opinion, fools who in one sense have never learned to respect other people for anything, and all their whole goal in life is about ripping people off. That's why we have identity theft and people preying on the elderly in terms of getting their life savings. I mean, biblically, they're fools. Now, they're going to brag about, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, how brilliant they are, how they can take advantage of individuals, but who wants that badge of honor at the end of life? I think God might have something to say with it. But the idea here is that discipline is about teaching children, and if I can use a New Testament phrase, that the love of money can lead to all kinds of evil. And so there's a responsibility with, I believe, Christian parents that they also need to be in this process of teaching kids how to be stewards of money that we have, whether it's earning allowance or getting a job when they get to a certain age. One of the adages that kids usually grow up with, especially when it comes to buying things, and I have heard it even with college students when it comes to paying for things, and that usually is, isn't that what parents are for, like to pay for all this stuff? And my response when I heard that is, I'm sorry, I didn't get that manual. But that sometimes becomes part of the manipulator and the process of what we have to struggle with. And we have to make sure, I would suggest to you, that to some degree, this all comes back to the idea of being entitled. And so when you think about this, I thought about the small boy who was recorded about writing a letter to Santa for at Christmas time. And he was telling Santa how good he was. And so he says, you know, I've been really good for the last 6 months. And then he paused for a second, looked at it, and he went, he scratched it out and put 3 months. And then he looked at that for a few minutes and then went, okay, 2 weeks. And then he looked at it and paused for a minute, and it was Christmas time. He was sitting in the room and kind of looked up and stared over, and the tree and all the ornaments were there. And he got up and walked over, and there was a little manger scene with Mary and Joseph, and picked up Mary, went back, sat down, looked at it, then started writing, God, if you ever want to see your mother again. But you know, the foolishness in people's hearts teaches them that sometimes the only way they can get stuff is if they manipulate and try to exploit people. And it can start really early. And so the idea of a manipulator, some of these things that are going on, really becomes difficult. But the idea is this whole process of that all these profiles become reflections not of bad kids so much, but bad parenting. Now, does it guarantee that if a kid does its own thing, even that can happen. There's a lot of kids who can just say, look, it's not because of what parents have done or not done. Kids at some point are going to make their own choices, and sometimes they're influenced by friends and other things. But one of the things we have to own, at least as parents, is that it's an ongoing job. It doesn't stop when they get into preschool. It doesn't stop when they get into grade school. It doesn't stop when they get into junior high. It doesn't stop when they get into high school. It doesn't stop when they get into college. And we know it doesn't stop even if they get married. Because sometimes, you know, because you know yourself, some of this foolishness surfaces even in our own life if we're not careful. Doesn't mean we eradicate it. It's a battle of the flesh and the things that are going on. And so the idea of parenting is about disciplining, training, educating, equipping our kids so that they don't become adult fools who don't know how to operate in the world. I mean, when Mother's Day, we talked about the values we were trying to put together, but that's the struggle. And so the manipulator is the last one. Let me share this story of how ongoing this tends to be. There was a father who was in a store, and his teenage son was going like, Dad, you know, now that I'm on the wrestling team, I need some weights to get in shape. And Dad was going like, oh, no. You know, it's kind of like, let's get a dog. I'll look after it, right? And so as they're talking away, they were in the store, and it says, Dad, please. He says, I'll promise. I'll use them every single day. I don't know, Michael, the dad said, it's really a commitment on your part. You really have to be disciplined on this. Please, Dad. Oh, they're not cheap. I'll use them, Dad. I promise. I'm going to use them. So as they're staring, their dad finally goes, well, I don't know. He's on the wrestling team. I guess we can help him. So he buys the the equipment, and they're waiting around for them to bring them from the back. And as they come out with the barbells and those kind of thing, the equipment, he starts heading for the car. And just as he's getting to the door, he hears his son going, Dad. And he turns around and looks at him. His son says, what, I have to carry him to the car? You know, parenting is a long haul kind of thing. It's not easy. We're never perfect. But I want to encourage us, whether we're grandparents or whether we're parents, whether we've got young kids, whether we're looking to have kids down the road, is that the idea of the scriptures is to say, listen, discipline is the right answer. Discipline is essential as being a parent. And I have to plead with you, it's more important to be a parent than it is to be a friend. And the issue is not how many battles you can avoid with your kid. We are battling for our kids. Because in the midst of the ebb and flow of life, we do not want them to grow up to be fools. And this is a component part of the reality of what it means to be committed to being a parent. Some of you might feel like, wow, it's kind of past the point of no return with me. I don't think so. No matter where it's at, I think God can do things in people's lives that you and I cannot. And I want to just try to encourage you to not give up hope. Whether you're a grandparent, whether you're a single parent, whether you think you'll be a future parent, whatever it is, that's part of the community of faith is to come alongside and help reinforce the biblical values and responsibilities that we have. It's really tricky because one of the problems is you get some parents walking around going, we're not going to raise our kids like that, and we're not going to do it that way, and we're not going to do it like that family does. And the real challenge, and the real thing we have to remember, is we're on the same team trying to do the same thing, to raise kids that will know and love Jesus Christ and be a light in the world. And you know the world will take every pound of flesh they can out of our kids. Father, as we think about Father's Day, some of us come from so many different backgrounds, and some of us may value Father's Day, some of us may detest it. Some of us have had great fathers, and some of us have really struggled with who our fathers have been. But I pray that you will give us a heart and a vision that one of the greatest and most challenging and sometimes impossible ministries that you give to us as dads is being a dad. Whether it's starting from scratch or whether it's building into our lives of our kids, regardless of their age, we don't want to raise fools. We don't want to be fools. Help us to know your grace in the midst of the journey. And we ask this in Christ's name.